Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On the Brian Lehrer Show today, NPR's Mara Liasson waiting in the wings. She'll be on in just a minute. David Sanger, the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, on the rare sight at a presidential news conference of a president of the United States trying very vocally to tamp down war drums rather than beat them. And later in the program, we have the president of Columbia University, Lee Bollinger, on a number of things, including the Supreme Court, possibly on the way to overturning an affirmative action case that involved him. But before we get to Mara, this is day... Well, this is the second to last day of our winter membership drive, and we humbly want to request that everyone who listens to us on a regular basis make that once-a-year contribution to help run the radio station. As you know, we took Super Tuesday off from the drive yesterday, thanks to your earlier support, and now we've got to finish taking care of business today and tomorrow. And we have one more contest in the drive, so anybody who's already pledged is in this, but if you pledge by the end of today, you will be entered to win the latest iPad. And if they announce the iPad 3 today, as is widely rumored, it'll be an iPad 3, plus a tour of the WNYC studios and lunch with one of your favorite WNYC hosts, Pick Me, Pick Me. So if you want to be in that contest, and just if you want to support the station, please do it right now, as now that we're back to the drive, it's going to end already tomorrow. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. We'll talk about it in a little more detail later on, but for now, just thank you so much for your support for the station. Hope you'll get it in right now before this all wraps up tomorrow. 1-888-376-WNYC, or pledge online at WNYC.org. Again, thanks to every one of you. So 6 of the 10 Super Tuesday states apparently went to Mitt Romney. I think there's one still too close to call. NPR's Mara Liasson is good enough to join us to help figure out what it means. Good morning, Mara.
Good morning.
And I'm hearing this reported in some places as the turning point after which no candidate other than Romney can win a majority of delegates anymore, or as part of Romney's ongoing failure to seal the deal with Republican voters. Is it a little of each?
Yes, of course. It's both of those things. It's becoming mathematically impossible to imagine any of the candidates other than Romney getting 1,144 delegates. But it's also true that as this primary season goes on, he's getting weaker, not stronger, as a general election candidate. Sometimes primaries strengthen. Sometimes long, hard-fought, nasty primaries strengthen the eventual nominee, and sometimes they don't. And one of the things that the Republican Party wanted is that they wanted something like what the Democrats had in 2008. They looked at it and they said, wow, look at that. Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton fought it out. They slugged it out all the way to Puerto Rico in June. And Barack Obama ended up being stronger, more enthusiasm behind him. We want that. Well, beware of what you wish for, you just might get it. And they designed a process that would go on longer, that had more proportional primaries, fewer winner-take-all primaries, and it gave a big incentive for candidates like Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, who don't have a lot of money or organization, to stay in the race because they have a chance of getting some delegates. That's only one part of this, because the other thing is just that Romney is weak with conservatives, with evangelicals, with white working class voters. He has a lot of constituencies that he just hasn't made the sale with. Now, he is so much stronger than his rivals, and he has so much more organization and resources that he can beat them every time. But he has to expend a lot of time and effort to do it. And the process is making his negatives with voters in general, but in particular, independent voters, go up.
So after all the states and all the delegates from yesterday, it is much harder, maybe impossible, for anyone other than Romney to suggest they might have a path to 1,144 delegates, the number needed for nomination. But what about Romney's own ability to get there mathematically if he keeps getting split results? Are we getting to the point where it's looking more likely, or would you say less likely, that there will be a brokered convention?
No. I don't think there was ever the possibility of a brokered convention. Now it's even less likely. First of all, let's define our terms. Brokered convention means that there are some brokers. There are some party elders who go into a back room and make a deal. That's what a brokered convention means. A contested convention is when nobody comes to Tampa with 1,144 delegates and you have to either have some multiple ballots or horse trading or something like that. I don't think we're going to have either of those.
Good distinction. Now, Romney's big strength is supposed to be his business experience at a time of economic challenge, but unemployment is now finally somewhat on the wane. So in his victory speech last night, Romney framed it this way.
My friends, the truth is 8% unemployment is not the best America can do. It's just the best that this administration can do.
So does Romney make any specific promises or predictions about employment or the economy, like Gingrich promises $2.50 a gallon gasoline?
Well, he did once say, I think, in a town meeting to some person, if I win, you'll have a job. I think he might have been a college student or a college graduate. If I win, you'll have a job. If Obama wins, you won't. Something like that.
To one guy.
Yeah. I don't think he said, I can't think of a time that he said unemployment will be X percent if I win. Can you?
No, it's just, but that's my question. He's just trying to.
It's very important that he, first of all, he has built his whole campaign, as you said, about being the guy with the business experience to turn around the economy. The economy's terrible. It's Obama's fault. It would have been better if he hadn't enacted the stimulus, et cetera. And I can make it better. That is a strategy that is dependent on a bad economy, or at least people being pessimistic about the economy getting better. So he is in the uncomfortable position of having to talk down the economy, which isn't that hard to do. It's still pretty bad. But that means that he has to be pessimistic, and optimists are usually win elections. So he's in a little bit of a bind. He can't seem like he's being pessimistic and not, quote, believing in America. And Barack Obama will certainly accuse him of that. But on the other hand, he does have to remind voters that the economy isn't growing fast enough. We're not coming out of this recession fast enough. And, he's going to hang that around Obama.
NPR's Mara Liasson with us. Here's a clip from Santorum's speech last night that you used at your Morning Edition report about the Obama universal health care law. Listen to the apocalyptic terms, folks, that Santorum uses about what the law signifies to him.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the beginning of the end of freedom in America. Once the government has control of your life, then they got you.
Then they got you.
Yeah, he is a dark guy. He does paint a kind of vision. It's kind of like, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen without the uplift or something. But the point is that he also identifies himself with these small towns that have been left behind. And that's the positive part of his message. He really does know his audience, and he is able to identify with blue collar, white working class Republican voters in these small towns that are suffering. But his vision of the government being crushing liberty, and that everybody's going to be dependent, and they gotcha. I mean, it is really, it is very apocalyptic, and he didn't sound like a happy warrior last night.
No, and I wonder how much you think that language resonates with those demographics you were just describing, who he's strong with. Because, for example, Morning Edition also reported today that 20% of Americans say they're having trouble affording health insurance and paying their medical bills. So I wonder if you think it's actually a winning issue with working class voters who are just trying to take care of their families, who aren't sort of, you know, intellectual free market conservatives, when they talk about a health insurance law like it's the gulag.
Yeah, well, I think that, he does well with those voters, but he doesn't do well enough to make up for the fact that he's outspent on the air by Romney 6-1. If you're talking about how he would do in a general election, that's a whole other
question.
I
am, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, we're not there yet, and he's not going to be the nominee, so it's pretty hypothetical.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the nominee, but that would be, if he was a happier warrior, I think that would be his threat, that he could appeal to those voters in a way that Barack Obama can't. But by delivering that message in a way that does resonate with those voters, because he does beat Romney in that constituency in every state, he is shining a light on one of Romney's many weaknesses, which is that he hasn't found a way to make a real connection with those voters who are making up a larger and larger part of the Republican primary electorate.
So next week, Alabama and Mississippi, where Newt Gingrich hopes to extend his southern block of states west from South Carolina and Georgia to form this connected block of deep South states, and I guess with the hope of then setting up a bigger state win in Texas through that geographic route. Does next week become make or break for Gingrich in that way? Do you think last night was make or break for Gingrich?
Well, he said last night was make or break. If he didn't win Georgia, he couldn't continue. So he passed that test and he won Georgia. And yes, I think the scenario you lay out is probably what he's thinking. I still think even if he does that, he can't get 1,144 delegates. But that being said, his continued presence in the race and winning the southern states shows yet again that Romney can't win the South, which is the bedrock of the Republican Party in the United States.
So as the primaries go state to state and the candidates get better known or their images solidify, are they less susceptible to the negative attacks of each other? And is it all now just demographics? You can kind of predict who will win where and how it'll turn out? Or can change happen?
Well, change can happen. But let me say one thing about this. Saying that Romney's having these – I want to back up because I don't want to paint too dire a picture. The problems that he is having in the primary does not mean these are going to be the same problems that he's going to have in the general. In other words, he doesn't do well among Southern voters, evangelicals, white working class, you know, people who consider themselves very conservative. That doesn't mean those people won't vote for him in the fall. There was a quote, I think it was in a Washington Post piece today, that really summed everything up. But it was a voter who said, you know, I'm voting for Santorum. In the primary, I vote my heart. But in the fall, I vote the party. And I think that he will be able to coalesce the Republican base behind him. I don't know how enthusiastic they'll be, and that will be a drag for him.
But always the balance, yeah. Right, appealing to swing voters on the one hand, but getting your base enthusiastic enough to turn out in large numbers on the other. And we've seen cases like I think the Clinton-Bush race in 1992, where after Pat Buchanan ran in the primaries to the right of President H.W. Bush, that a lot of the more conservative Republicans stayed home and that helped Clinton, yes?
Yes. Now, we don't know if that's going to happen this time because conservatives' hatred of Barack Obama and their burning desire to get him out of office might overcome any distaste they have for Mitt Romney. I think the other question to ask is, to what extent is this primary campaign hurting Romney's ability to move back to the center after he gets the nomination or has it sewn up? That, I think, is the larger question, because I think he will have the Republican base, you know, whatever it is, 45, 46, 47% of the electorate. Obama will have the Democratic base, and they'll be battling it out for the voters in the middle. And I think Romney has hurt himself. He's been forced to go farther to the right than he expected, to focus more on social issues, contraception, abortion. I think his move on immigration was also damaging with Hispanic voters. You saw that recent poll where I think he's getting something like 14% of the Hispanic vote compared to Obama. I mean, really abysmal. So that's also a question. I mean, Romney, I think all along he's been positioned as the candidate who can best win in the fall because he couldn't be painted as too extreme. But this primary has given the Obama campaign more ammunition to try to do that to him.
So before you go, former First Lady Barbara Bush spoke out this week.
Yeah, the worst campaign she's ever seen.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty damning.
And there's a poll, to the point you were just making, showing this primary race has increased the percentage of Democrats who say they'll turn out enthusiastically for their candidate, President Obama, from just 36% up to 49%. So it's not been the Republican Party's finest season.
No. And, you know, it's really interesting because the Republicans did have a big enthusiasm edge going in. I have seen other polls, though, that say that they still have one. But the thing, a lot of things have changed. Number one, this has been a real circular firing squad for the Republicans. And also, the economy is getting better. Obama looks better. The things that he's done recently has made Democrats happier. So I do think a couple months ago, I would have said the landscape was tilted against the president. I would say now it's absolutely even. And he has, you know, a fighting chance to be reelected, especially if he can get his approval ratings, not just flirting with 50%, but over 50 and stay there.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, I know you've been on the air constantly over the last day. I really appreciate you giving us some time this
morning. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And up next, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times, on President Obama's Super Tuesday news conference, a little stealing of the spotlight, a little upstaging of the Republicans, or at least attempt to do so, but an impassioned plea, rare for a sitting president of the United States, to try to tamp down war drums. We'll play the clip and talk to David Sanger coming up.